My name is Jay Freeman. Everyone online knows me as Sorek, though. I run Cydia, the alternative to the App Store on jailbroken iPhones. One of my like weird pastimes is to read the actual like text of laws and the text of like judgments from when things actually end up going to court. So may have something useful to say. I certainly have spent a lot of time talking about network neutrality.
All right. Well, what we had done, of course, we wanted to do a combination was until you showed up, it was just me. So what we had. What I was going to do was pretty much just do round robin with everyone in the room. But now that you're here, we'll start off with that because we can actually speak to it more now. And then just do back and forth with audience. Does that work for you?
Okay.
Sweet. All right. Let's get started. But thank you. Can we go ahead?
Yes.
All right. Well, Jay's already introduced himself. My name is Jeff Termasazen. I used to work for a company that did audio and video recording analysis. I currently work for a payments processing company. I have a BA in political science. I have a MS in cybersecurity, and I'm working on an MS in international studies and intelligence security. You guys all know why you're here. It's the net neutrality panel. I'm actually really happy to see that we are pretty much full. So that is fantastic. Obviously, this is a big issue. So as he's the one who actually reads all the laws, do you want to go ahead and kick it off?
Okay. I have a weirdly controversial attitude towards network neutrality, I guess. So one of the things that I think is really interesting to look at with network neutrality is the business model of why network neutrality actually happens. I'm sorry, like why the opposite of network neutrality happens, and then why I think we need to do in order to get network neutrality. Because be clear, I am pro network neutrality. Throughout everything I'm about to say, I am pro network neutrality. Just bear with me. Okay, so we end up with a lot of people who have cell phone accounts. So for example, I have an AT&T account. My AT&T account, I have the tethering plan for it, so I paid extra to get tethering. Sometimes you have to pay extra to get, for example, FaceTime. This is one of the things that's not network neutral. This is one of the things that we don't like. So why does this happen? Okay, so let's say that you were going to charge a certain amount of money for a gigabyte of bandwidth for everyone in this room. And you then look and you see how many people in this room actually utilize a full gigabyte of bandwidth during the course of a month. It's not going to be most of the people in this room. So if you are competing against a company that charges at cost for a gigabyte of bandwidth, and you do that math and you figure that out, you're going to lower your prices down to what the actual average usage of everyone in this room is for that first big gigabyte. For subsequent gigabytes, you can have different algorithms. You might actually charge at cost to subsequent gigabytes. So that first gigabyte, though, you're going to end up charging a fraction of what it normally would actually cost you. Now the problem is that half of everyone in this room gets an iPhone. And they start using FaceTime, and they start using FaceTime over the network. When you have this FaceTime going over the network, you guys are all now using four times as much traffic as everyone else. So there are two things that can happen. Either A, we do the math out and we figure out that 1 plus 4. Now we're going to have to charge everyone 2.5 times as much, or we're going to have to charge you guys four times as much and you guys the original price. The first thing is something that users just don't really like to do. I mean, like the idea that like, okay, so now because Apple did something, we're now going to charge everyone more. So what ends up happening instead is that the bandwidth provider tries to figure out some way to differentiate all of these users in order to put them into different tranches in order to charge them different amounts. And that's why we see the different pricing brackets for things like FaceTime. Netflix is another interesting example. I think it was over half of all downstream internet traffic is either YouTube or Netflix. I don't know, combined. I don't know what the breakdown between the two is, but people have talked about Netflix being one of like the massive usages of internet over the course of the last couple years of Netflix, you know, really becoming popular. It's a similar kind of problem where you could either take all people like me who use Netflix constantly. I actually just have Netflix streaming in the background when I'm not even watching it, just constantly just in order to have background noise and charge me more. Or you can charge everybody more. Those are really your two options at some point. So the argument that I then make is that the people who are arguing for network neutrality need to take a bitter pill, which is that you also need to fight for per byte billing, or at least like really narrow billing. Like you can't have this like either an unlimited plan, which is like unlimited value for limited price, or even like these massive tranches where you don't have to spend much time thinking about your bandwidth usage. You have to also take you have to move those tranches down to the point where you're going to have to like think through how much bandwidth you're using over the course of the month, and you're going to get billed a portion of that. And I think those two things are fundamentally tied. And so, controversial opinion. Hopefully, that makes me an interesting panelist.
How many of you have AT&T and you have the original unlimited plan? All right. Have you guys tried to get tethering added to that?
I hacked my phone and tethered it.
Using stuff I provide, humorously enough.
I have an Android.
Oh, Android, yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
If you don't jailbreak your own phone, what happens is that you get an option from AT&T is that those plans are no longer offered. You can't get the unlimited plan anymore because, as he was saying, when people first came out, it was just IMs, messages, posts, nothing that was really sucking up a bunch of bandwidth. Now you've got the streaming from Netflix on your phone, you've got Hulu, you've got FaceTime, Skype, all these things over here that just really suck up a whole bunch of bandwidth, so they stopped offering that. Then people went, all right, well, we want to get the tethering for this because, you know, I want my friends to be able to do this as well, and they don't have this unlimited plan, which I do. So AT&T then went and put a block on that, so if you've got the original plan, you can't get tethering anymore with it, unless you do like him and jailbreak your phone and basically apply it yourself. And in some ways it's good, in some ways it's bad. It's good because it means that there's a bunch of services out there that people are using. We like to watch videos, we like to download things, we like to chat with one another. It's bad on the other hand because it gives the companies an excuse to start messing around with pricing structures and things like that, and they are never as transparent about that as they should be. Everything they do is based on, well, it's costing us money. Sometimes it does, sometimes it does not. It depends on how that goes back and forth. Are any of you guys Comcast subscribers? Did you guys see the recent thing they came to agreement with Netflix?
Yeah.
All right. And Netflix was like, well, we're not really doing this, but unless you come to agreement, we're not really going to do it, but no one's going to really get very good Netflix. So they sort of jimmied that to the point that they got what they wanted out of it, namely Netflix is, they've come to some sort of agreement with Netflix, whether it's paying them more, whether it's lower usage, whatever it is, it's between them. And who's the other one they did with, Cox or Time Warner?
I think it's Time
Warner. There's another one that came to the same thing. And part of that is because Netflix is the single largest supplier of video in the world right now as far as subscriptions go. YouTube is also big, but that's pretty much free unless you're on specific channels. So on the one hand, the telco companies do have a point that, you know, we're using more bandwidth, we need more equipment, we need more engineers for this, but they're giving us a very skewed picture of where their costs actually lie. There are a bunch of technology out there that they're not even looking at because it's going to cost them business, like the streaming over power lines, which if you guys look around now, you get some really good adapters for running your LAN through your power lines in your home now, which means you don't have to have the expensive routers anymore, you don't need to run separate cables and everything because you've already got the wiring in your house. But the power companies have been able to do this for years, but they haven't, because they're only playing the same markets that these guys are, because of this bad pricing structures as far as everyone else looks like, and looks like it's too big of a market to get into. So where he goes, and with your opinion on that over there, I've wanted for a long time to see them separate who owns the physical media versus who owns the services. And if it's the same company, fine, but they should be operating as separate companies or separate entities under the same company, which means that if I want to start an ISP, I'm going to be charging the same rates to access the data lines for any subdivision that Comcast or Cox or Time Warner is. But as it is now, whoever owns the lines pretty much gets to decide what happens to it. And they have, it's not really legal because they won't admit to it, and it would be under the RICO law they'd have issues, but technically you're free to have any cable provider you want at any location you want. But if there's already a cable provider there, the others choose not to come into that market. Whereas if you had the separation between those, I think a lot of the issues with net neutrality would largely evaporate because you've now got a much easier playing field, much along the ways they used to have when you used to buy modems. And you have some guy in his garage with like 50 modems all selling to his friends around, and here's basically the ISP for the dial-up, which kind of died out once we went to cable. So there's a number of things there that are really messing us up as far as net neutrality goes, and not the least of which is that everyone's playing with the definition of net neutrality. Your laws and Congress, what they're trying to pass is not really what we want to have happen. Most people have a conflicting definition of net neutrality to what our legislatures have. Do any of you follow those legal battles? Not? Okay. What have you guys found as far as those goes? Oh, we're going to have this orange box. Feel free to throw it around. Don't pitch it underhanded, but it's a fantastic little microphone.
Oh.
Just throw it between each other.
Okay. The only thing I saw was a diagram that NPR made about petitions that people had submitted to Congress about net neutrality and the opinions that had been sort of clustered in this giant sort of visual map. And that was kind of interesting. I mean, I know I sent in a petition as well and wrote my own thing rather than the pre-made thing. And I mostly talked about wanting to make sure all websites had equal access. That was my idea of what net neutrality is. But I guess my other thing is, what is the definition of net neutrality?
Depends who you ask.
Yeah. So this concept of websites having the same access, I think, is really interesting. So how many here have heard about first of all, of course, everyone here has heard of Wikimedia, right? The foundation behind Wikipedia. Who here have heard of their sub-project, which is designed to provide Wikipedia for free to people in, I think it was Africa. It might have been South America, but I think it was Africa. So what they've been doing is they've been partnering with ISPs there in order to give internet access for free to people who are only utilizing their internet service for Wikipedia, which is actually kind of interesting because this is something that a lot of people are like, this is awesome, we want to have acknowledged to all these people, et cetera, but it's actually the exact opposite of network neutrality. Because now it's like Wikipedia has special access to these subscribers because they paid more in order to do something on the back end, and then now the users don't have to, et cetera. So I think there's a lot of complexity, I think, when you start talking about websites having extra access. You have to kind of like think on both sides of the playing field. And
always make sure you understand, if you're reading about any organization, make sure you understand their definition of what network neutrality is, because it may well be completely different to what you think it is. And this is especially true with the petitions. They say, oh, sign up for net neutrality and everything. So that's wonderful. They all sign the thing. But if you actually read what it's saying, it's the opposite of what you actually believe. So make sure that if you're dealing with anyone, that your definitions match their definitions of what this is.
The LCC and the Obama administration, they support net neutrality. And right now, it's in a committee right now. And they're seeking comments on the issue in the federal government. So that's what I heard.
People, you also need to keep abreast of these things. EFF's a good one that you guys can go to read. Follow the prominent tech bloggers. Follow him. I'm sure you do a lot of work with net neutrality and posting opinions and things.
I do post opinions. They're controversial opinions sometimes.
And a lot of times we need the controversial opinions because they really make good points on both sides. I'm actually taking a course right now in which we are required to post ourselves and then post what the professor calls a DDA, which is the designated devil's advocate. And essentially it's an anonymous account. The professor knows who you are, but your friends don't, or your classmates don't. And you're required to post X number of posts under that, in which you can then go and post opinions you might not necessarily want your classmates to associate with you. So read both sides of these things, because there are really good points on both sides that need to be taken into account. It's definitely not one of those situations like SIPA or ACTA, where it really is one-sided and it's the wrong side.
So network neutrality for me is at the tier 1, tier 2 provider level, not a consumer-based access. So let's say where AT&T is peering with Savvis, is peering with Level 3, up there in the carrier cloud, aren't those guys still playing nice, though, not blocking out other competitors in the market space? So I'm not talking a consumer-based access. I'm talking all the, you know, high-level peering that's happening up on the internet. Aren't they still playing nice, though, with everybody on not queuing across those sort of links?
That would be my way of describing it in the sense that, I mean, we haven't had network neutrality before. That's one thing I think a lot of people kind of pitch the battle as we want to maintain network neutrality, when in fact we've never had network neutrality. And the idea is that now we would like to add legislation that would actually force network neutrality to occur. And yet in the environment when we have not had network neutrality, we have not seen these incredibly brutal situations that you're describing that you would kind of naively expect.
Right.
That said, the things can be subtle. I mean, I've already described, I mean, Wikipedia, for example, is in essence, like, there's a subpart of Wikipedia that's kind of battling the opposite battle against network neutrality in order to utilize it for their purposes.
But that's kind of a bottom-up approach. I mean, they've got a long ways to go before they're affecting, you know, all the... you know, the big carrier equipment that's out there.
Yeah, what you do see, however, is not the massive war, but you do see the like field war. So an example of this one more historically is so the App Store was actually a major like the iTunes app, like Apple App Store, was actually a major network neutrality boon. So the way that you used to get an application onto a phone is you would negotiate with the carrier who had partnered with phone manufacturers in order to construct custom hardware and for that, like, that was branded with, for example, Verizon logos. Then the that hardware was shipped with software that Verizon chose to put on that phone, and the they would then be paid by the companies who were utilizing bandwidth in order to subsidize things. This is, of course, back when bandwidth was so bad that, like, you wanted to download a giant image or a movie or something, well, that's going to cost a dollar. If you want to send a text message, that's, you know, not as much. But if you want to, like, and so they tried to make it all seem like everything was fairly equivalent in price, like a video versus a ringtone versus an image, but it was because they were billing differently on the back end, all these app providers. And suddenly the App Store comes out, and AT&T has absolutely no introspection at all into how applications are coming out on their device. In fact, I actually talked to some people who are fairly high up at AT&T, and they're like, well, we can't even get this application that we want on the device, because in order to have the bandwidth limitations, they had to just ask Apple to have, like, some blanket limitation that was applied in the review process that then, of course, would end up applying to them, because Apple's going to screw them on that on purpose. So...
So on the opposite of the consumer end, there's also the big companies that are against network neutrality, like Google and Reddit. Back when Cisco was going through, they had the blackout and everything, and now Google's rolling out Google Fiber and everything, and people seem to think, this is going to kind of save us and bring forward network neutrality. I was wondering, is that, you know, potentially true, or is just overhyped or whatever?
Yes and no. One of the reasons Google is rolling out that things and essentially making it free is because the more you utilize it, the more they know about you, and they're making their money on the back end. All the searches you do, websites you go to, pages you read, whatever, they collect that data and then sell that data off, which means that for them, providing network neutrality is actually a loss leader. They don't really care about the bandwidth itself. Whatever you want, they'll give you, because they're gonna make it on the back end, selling that information to someone else or to someone else's. You see a lot of times they'll say, we promise we will not sell this information to anyone. And that's fine. What they do is they go into a business partnership and they don't sell it, but it's part of the deal that they just give it to them in exchange for them being in partnership, which they get money for, but they're not actually getting money for the data, they get money for the partnership. So essentially they're still selling your data. So those kinds of things. That said, though, there is benefits to having free internet. Underprivileged communities, schools, everything like that benefit from high-speed internet for any number of reasons. I know NASA streams a channel for free. TED Talks are out there. There are really good uses for that. But the way that that gets paid for is by this huge data mining that goes on and then selling it to whoever wants to buy that information.
So how does network neutrality affect the consumer versus how it affects the businesses?
I'm sorry, could you, when you say the businesses, do you mean the, like, AT&T? Do you mean, like, the like Wikipedia? Do you mean, like, Netflix?
I mean the internet service providers.
The internet service providers. I would say that when you establish network neutrality, you put the ISP in the situation where they have to make certain that the value that they are, like the value that they're extracting from the customer is in relation to the cost of each customer. And because they are not now able to extract value from the other companies, which, by the way, is actually impossible. So I mean, like, again, like, I'm pro network neutrality. If nothing else, just you actually, in the grand scheme of things, you start causing internet infrastructure to be built in ways where it's very difficult for the ISP to track in order to try to force network neutrality. So but just establishing it, you just make it very clear to the ISP that that's what's going to happen. And so now the consumer is going to be in a situation where they're going to have to start, like, thinking through and paying for that usage. That's my comment, but I might not have succeeded in answering your question. Do you have a?
When you say that consumers paying for it, would you say that, for example, say with Netflix, would that be, say, a higher subscription rate based on the bandwidth they're using, or would you go for more of a sort of a per item?
So in the pro network neutrality world, I think that you're going to be paying to the ISP for smaller tranches on that initial tranche. So by the way, I use the word tranche as like the grouping of bandwidth that's utilized when you're talking about all the different users. And so you've got these people who fall into different tranches depending on how much bandwidth they're utilizing. And the people who are using a low amount of bandwidth, you're going to have more tranches. You're going to have finer grain tranches in order to be able to support that. Because I, for example, sometimes I'm only utilizing, like, if I'm not using Netflix, I only utilize hundreds of megabytes per month. If I'm using Netflix, I use many gigabytes per month. And so the difference in having everyone in the world using many gigabytes per month and hundreds of megabytes per month is a tangible infrastructure difference. There actually is a major cost difference between even maintaining that infrastructure, much less building that infrastructure. And the people who are choosing to utilize more bandwidth should have to pay for that somehow.
How many of you guys do use some sort of a streaming service, Netflix, Hulu? All right. How many of you guys watch that in by choice in standard definition versus HD? So very few of you actually choose the standard definition over the HD. And in there alone is a huge difference just in your files. Difference between DVD and Blu-ray. I mean, DVD is what, 4.7 gig? Blu-rays are what, 30 gig?
I'm not
sure. For discs. There's a big difference just on that there. So it's not just him and I could buy the same movie to watch. If I buy the standard definition, I'm using anything from a quarter to maybe a tenth of what he'll be using as far as bandwidth goes. So it's not simply what you're buying, it's also the type of what you're buying that will change. And now we've got Comcast, and they've got a nifty little feature that basically says, if I find whatever channel you want in HD, I'll automatically flip you there. So it's really nice, because you find something there and, you know, random thing, and you're suddenly getting an HD versus the standard definition. But that kind of gets sneaky. It's almost like roaming charges, because you didn't choose the HD version, but you're getting that, and you're now sucking up a whole lot more bandwidth than you originally used. We're running into a problem there with a lot of older infrastructure as well. My apartment community recently switched over to Comcast from something called DirectPath, which I'd never actually heard of until I moved in there. And DirectPath is the ISP side of DirecTV. And the absolute top speed we could get there on a downhill with a backwind was about 6 megasecond optimal. What we averaged out was at under a meg. And in the evenings during prime time, that dropped down into the kilobyte range. At times, we actually dropped at under 10 kilobytes. We're in the single digits of those. Essentially unusable. It's even worse than modem speeds. They switched over, they did lay new cable, and now we're getting 20 meg easily, 20 plus meg. So, but again, it took Comcast coming and investing in that, partly because the community property was willing to pay the difference in that, and basically say, we've got 200 apartment complex, we've got at least 150 who have said they will switch to you guys if you do this, which gives a boon to the your ISP to go and find new markets and whatnot. But again, now we're still stuck with Comcast. I can't go to Time Warner and say, you know what, you guys have got a much better internet package. You're giving me 100 meg for $100 a month. Comcast is giving me 100 meg for $200 a month. I'm going to go with you guys. They'd be like, we don't service that area. Even though I should be able to choose them, I can't. And I keep coming back to the thing about them making that deal with Netflix, because that really irks me. Someone mentioned that they block content. These folk don't block content. They simply slow you down to the point that it becomes annoying enough for you that you complain to the company. Because if your Netflix doesn't work, you don't really complain to your ISP all that much. You call Netflix and go like, what's up, guys? I'm paying you this money and I'm not getting the content I'm buying for. And they're like, well, we're sorry, you know, they can't basically say your ISP is screwing you over, but that's essentially what's happening.
Throttling,
yes. And there's actually been a bunch of privacy issues on that, because not so much with the streaming data, but with the peer-to-peer stuff, where prior to Netflix coming out, peer-to-peer was sucking up vast amounts of bandwidth on the internet in comparison to everything else that was going on. And companies started throttling that based on deep packet inspection. And that's basically where they dive into individual packets to see what it is and go, this is peer-to-peer traffic, we're dropping this right down to the bottom of the thing. Partly because of legal things to try and make it, try and be nice to like RIA and MPAA. But when the streaming stuff came out, they already had that in place to do that. And that's kind of the tactic they used to get companies like Comcast and whatnot to sign on with them, or rather that Comcast get to get Netflix to sign on with them, is to basically throttle it down to the point that it becomes irritating enough for you that you essentially do their work for them. You like, do something about this. And eventually Netflix capitulates, gives in to them, and comes to whatever deal they're going to come to. He's got a question in the back. Yeah, I was pointing. Sorry.
So after, why isn't broadband considered a common carrier? It has to do with the fact that the law, that the telecommunications was from 1996 before broadband was contemplated. Is it because of the nature of the infrastructure? Why isn't it legally considered? Why hasn't the law been changed, considered a public utility?
Because the law always lags behind the technology. Mm-hmm. There is no technology we have that we have laws that came out to actually deal with it until we ran through a whole bunch of problems with whatever the new technology is. You guys know AT&T was broken up to a whole bunch of little companies. If you look over the past decade, two decades, that's kind of been reversing itself again, where you had huge Bell South that got broken to a bunch of baby bells. They're now sort of doing the opposite and coming back together again, but this time they're doing it in a way that makes it, that basically Congress is doing the work for them. So it's very hard to be able to do something like getting them into there, because they've already got these relationships with your politicians, they've got the lobbyists, they've got the money behind them to allow things like these huge mergers that come into place. And we're starting to see fewer and fewer actual media companies. You may have four or five different names that you're dealing with, but ultimately they're owned by the same three or four entities that have all like sort of bought into each other, and this owns so much of that stock and back and forth as far as that goes. So I think, though, if you agree, we're fast getting back to the point where we were with the original AT&T, and we're gonna need at some point for Congress to come back in and essentially re-explode them out to a bunch of baby ISPs again, so that they're actually competing with one another versus being able to deal with one another in the background, because they're all essentially working for each other and with each other.
So the comment that I'll make is that I think that that regulation is really useful, and I think the regulation is really powerful, but I feel like if we construct different incentive structures for companies, that we can guide them in the direction that we want them to go in without having to resort to regulation that will then become stale again, which will then screw us again in the future.
Right. So we being the consumer.
And so that's why but the problem is that then the consumers, are so many of them, it's very difficult to educate everybody in these things. But like the comments you were saying earlier about the throttling leading by the ISP in order to force the user to go to Netflix. The reason that happened is because of the things I was talking about earlier, that we have one customer who's costing the ISP a lot more money than other people. And a question is that whose fault is that? Is it really the user's fault? The user doesn't really understand the difference between the things that they're doing on their internet. Is it the ISP's fault? Arguably, in a way, because the ISP is billing in this manner of either unlimited or massive tranches or burst based on bandwidth, etc. But then again, there usually is at least some competition. I mean, in my area, I can either have cable or I can switch to DSL, and it's drastically different technology. You could argue it's not really competition, but the thing is, as far as like the way that they price, it's kind of competitive. Like if one of them was priced in a drastically different way that I didn't like, I'm gonna end up going to the other one. And so if you, per byte, users don't like that, so you end up going over to the one that the tranches or the unlimited, et cetera. Then you ask, well, is it Netflix's fault? And I kind of think, in a way, it is Netflix's fault. If you look at the if you look at what Netflix has built, they've figured out how to utilize this infrastructure that's around in order to make a successful company without having to actually invest in that infrastructure. They bill users based only on the content, not based on the bandwidth utilization. So they're actually not encouraged to use bandwidth efficiently. They'll use whatever encoding they can get to the user. The only reason to make it more efficient is if the user doesn't have good enough internet. So if the ISP, for example, the throttling is almost a way of encouraging Netflix in order to use better encoding technology. Have you noticed on Netflix, if you rewind by 10 seconds, it throws away everything you've buffered forward and starts over again? That is insane. That is not something that would happen if they were actually on the hook for the bytes that they were pushing over the wire. That's actually a bad user experience that has ended up being caused. And I'm not certain if it's due to some kind of anti-buffering contract that they've negotiated with the content providers. You can imagine something where you're not allowed to store the... Yeah. Right, or if you can imagine where I was going with that. But either way, that is something that they have no incentive to bother fixing because it's not a big deal right now. Because from their perspective, the ISP should be providing infinite bandwidth to their purpose.
Actually, at least for some of that, though, that's from Netflix by design. They've got I don't know if remove code monkey is the right word, but they've basically got a random script that they've purposely put onto their servers that will randomly just drop servers as part of a test, redundancy test. So they'll see, right, we've got so many connections, the script goes through and picks like five of those things just to drop. And what they're testing is to make sure that if that primary connection is dropped, they've got backup servers that'll pick it up without you noticing the difference. But now, if it does switch to a different server, that server doesn't have an idea of what the other one was doing, so you start from scratch again as far as that goes. So I don't know if it's all related to that, but at least some of it is part of Netflix's own idea to try and make sure that they can provide you uninterrupted streaming no matter what happens. You know, if it's a power outage at the data center or some utility thing digs through a line or whatever, they want you never to actually see what's happening on the back end. And so this thing just floats around 24/7 and just randomly drops connections to make sure that as they're writing their code and they're deploying their code, there's enough redundancy built into the code and into the infrastructure that you never see a drop anywhere unless it's physically something between like you and your access point. You know, your neighbor digs through your cable or something along those lines.
Well,
okay, do you have something to say?
Oh yeah, I was saying, like, going to the discussion a couple panels ago about, like, privacy and then encrypt all the things. I mean, that's kind of, like, my response to this. If I'm being throttled, put in my VPN, bam, don't worry about it anymore. Because they're in deep packet inspection, they're not going to, if the packet's encrypted, they're not going to see what's in anyway. So they're not going to have it marked against their filters of this thing to throttle.
But the thing is your ISP going to support you running that encrypted link?
In general, yes. I mean, like, there's nothing especially expressed against it. I mean, I'm using a VPN. There's nothing wrong with that.
No, there isn't anything wrong with it there. But you need both sides to be agreeing to use a VPN. And
true.
Netflix isn't necessarily going to encrypt their stuff because you want it encrypted, specifically because the ISP is going to give them a hard time about it. But
well,
if you actually control both ends...
Yeah. Well, I pay for like a service that then pipes the traffic through an encrypted route so that
right.
My ISP does not see what's in my packets.
But what ends up happening is that at some point the ISP is going to realize that if everyone's doing what you're doing, well, now the VPNs are the massive bandwidth utilizer, not Netflix, so then they're going to go after VPNs to try to get
well,
their money.
Well, I mean, you just encrypt everything anyway.
Well, it doesn't matter if you encrypt it because you know that it's going to the VPN.
True.
Right, because at that point they stop looking at what's in the data and we don't care what the data is. It's you're just using a bunch of data and you're being charged regardless of what that is.
Well, true. I mean, I support that because I think for me, net neutrality is that all bandwidth should be considered equal no matter what. I mean, if you want to charge more for that, then tell the consumer you're going to do that and charge more for that. Don't slow down their service below what you've advertised and you're in a contractual agreement with them for. If you offer me 20 megabits per second, then give me that. If I'm using more than your cap, then charge me more.
Yeah, but see, the thing is, it's not possible for them to offer you 20 megabits per second. And that's the interesting. Yeah. That's the part where I blame ISPs is that they really is that there's these ideas that they've put into users' head that they're able to guarantee some amount of bandwidth to you. I mean, that's just not how bandwidth works.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that like it's a bad advertising, bad business model. Like don't try to hide behind these smoke screens, because then you offering something and then. You then say cutting in half or then throttling certain things. For me, that's false advertising.
So here's my question for you. If Sprint tomorrow said that they were going to not they were going to provide the opposite of an unlimited plan. They were going to provide the opposite of a bandwidth guarantee. They were going to specify that we were going to bill you for like power, where we're going to have like a peak hourly rate that we're going to bill based during peak hours. We're going to have an off hour rate in order to just try to minimize your usage, and we're going to like micro bill you. How many people here would switch to that?
I mean, like, as long as they offered
everyone with their unlimited handoff, clearly
me a consistent speed that I, you know, then they'll
but
try
they
to, like,
can't change. Offer yes, you a consistent speed. True, that's not how bandwidth works.
True, but if I don't want them to throttle me in the back end. That's what I'm saying. I don't want you to change my thing in the back end.
And if they also said we will not throttle you and we are clearly pro network neutrality at this point, how many people here would switch? Two guys in the back. Well, actually, one and a half. Sorry.
Lady up front here has had her hand up. Can you bring the box up to her?
Might depend on what the rates are.
I can measure my rates and see if I'm going to be paying more on meter collection.
Right.
Yeah.
But then again, people have to understand how to measure their actual bandwidth and how much of their data is coming through is not actually stuff that you've asked for, but things like network overhead and that sort of thing as well. Or if you're running a Tor site, how much information you're not actually running, but that other people are running through you being part of that network.
So I've done a lot of readings of the comments that were given to the FCC recently on the topic of net neutrality. And my conclusion on the definition of net neutrality is those who are in favor of net neutrality define it as whatever lowers their costs or increase their profits.
And effectively.
Right. Which is why you have so many different definitions of it, because what lowers Netflix's cost or Google's cost or ADT or, you know, anybody's cost is going to be different. The other thing is, I'm curious if anybody actually knows of the type of throttling going on today that is being described, because the only throttling I'm aware of is of two kinds. One is the type you see with wireless providers, especially on the unlimited data plan type services, where they throttle end users, but not specific usages of those end users. So they don't throttle Netflix by those end users, they just throttle the end users, which if you're running for your VPN, it really doesn't matter.
Right.
It's still you. And the other type I've seen is the one that Comcast does, which again is they throttle heavy end users during network congestion. So when the network becomes congested, they decide that they are going to favor low bandwidth users over high bandwidth users. And I am completely unaware today, you know, within the past 3 years, of the type of throttling that is application specific, other than specifically things like the FaceTime, but that was kind of a weird case. So I'd be curious if you have actual examples, because I don't think it does a great service to cause people to think that this throttling that is being described here is actually going on.
I have seen a lot of that comes up with marketing as well. Recently, since the folk who actually had unlimited bandwidth, there's been a bunch of advertising that says, we will give you unlimited bandwidth. And I do not remember which company this was, and I apologize for that, but their definition was that you will have access 24/7. Anytime you want it, unlimited, you will have it. But your actual bandwidth may be limited based, as you said, based on peak time, peak times and whatnot, whereas the perception given that when they're advertising it is to the old model, where if you want to stream Netflix 24/7, they'll be right there for you. And when you actually go and ask about it, they're like, no, we just said we'd give unlimited access, so no matter what time of the day or night you want it, you will have net access. We just won't guarantee you an actual speed. And you'll also see that every single company that now markets ISP in any shape, way, or form, they'll have big 100 meg per second up to tiny down in the bottom there. And because I know the plan I'm on right now is supposed to be a 100 megabit plan, and we're getting 20 to 30 consistently. So I'm not complaining because we're not anywhere near the cap, but it's not the 100 that we were promised. And then the other big thing is it's a type of throttling, though not actually a bandwidth throttle, but they will also often interchangeably use megabit with megabyte when selling you things.
Yep.
So, you know, you get 100 megabit per second, it goes, wow, that's fast, but yeah, no, not so really much, because we said bit, not byte. And you get a whole different rate of speed then, and then you go complain and you get upset. But the next person, both the cable and the DSL companies do that. So you get upset with them for doing it, and you find that these guys are doing it as well. So it's pretty much back and forth. So a lot of what we were saying previously about the deep packet specs, a lot of that has fallen away over time because of cases that have come up. The deep packet inspection was largely a thing during the original trials with like RIA and Napster and Grokster and LimeWire and all those things. And as we said, the legalities always lag behind the technology. And as those cases came up and went before various courts and everything else, that sort of thing started getting filtered out because the court started saying, all right, based on understanding now, which was different from when we started, you can't do this because it's a privacy issue. So you're absolutely right in that you're not getting throttled in the same way you originally were, but they've changed the meanings of the contracts, the terms, conditions, and that you're still getting throttled just by marketing versus actual speed control.
I will say I witnessed firsthand that during the peak of the arguments with Netflix and Comcast, in my area, if you're on Comcast, Netflix was basically unusable at one point. I know there's been a lot of finger pointing of, well, it was actually this or it was actually that. But as soon as Netflix started paying Comcast money, mysteriously everything started working again greatly. On the flip side, any business that's using voice over internet for their phone system are doing something similar with quality of service, because VoIP needs a very strong connection for it to work versus some guy surfing Facebook. It doesn't really matter if that's slower. So,
well, just within your VoIP versus video, those packets are a specific type, something
right.
called SIP. And they are much, much smaller for comparable quality to any sort of a video feed. Even compared to audio streaming like MP3s or something, they're actually a lot smaller because they're voice only, and those protocols are very effectively limited to those voice regions versus the entire range for music. So it's a lot easier for them to prioritize that without really giving a hit on the network, because you're dealing with, no matter how long your phone call is, the packets themselves are much, much smaller. The compression ratios you get on those are very, very good. When we were doing the monitoring, your average voice recording was about 180K per minute. The video for that same time was anywhere between 5 and 10 meg per minute as far as that goes. So the VoIP can be kind of a difficult thing to track, simply because the bandwidth requirements allow it to be prioritized above pretty much everything else, because there's no real hit in the network as far as that goes. You'll have to have a huge amount of actual conversations going to even come close to the bandwidth that one HD Netflix user is sucking down.
Right.
There is no prioritization of over-the-top VoIP. Zero. Doesn't happen.
A lot of businesses internally. Very much
businesses so. Internally, but I'm talking about, you know, if you're using Skype, not on Verizon, but you know, over the internet, over Comcast or something, or if you're using Magic Jack, there is no prioritization.
That
businesses
may be,
can certainly buy
right.
it.
But like Comcast's brand VoIP.
That's a completely different network that does not run over the internet. It's a separate channel.
Yeah, it can be leased lines, because our company leases lines that we specifically use for things like that. Now, it's technically internet, in which it's going between different networks, but those are isolated from the internet at large. Anyone not on that link can't get into those things because it's an isolated system.
And just to say, what brought the Netflix to a head was when Netflix decided to lower its costs by using a different transit provider and threw 30% of busy hour internet traffic across completely different links and completely different paths that were totally not engineered to handle 30% of the internet traffic. It's not that they were slowing down Netflix, it's that Netflix threw its entire traffic over links that were not engineered for it. And that certainly made all Netflix users unhappy, but there was no way the ISPs were able to prepare for this because Netflix did not tell them that they were going to do this.
And that is something in which Netflix, I think, is at least somewhat unique, because as you mentioned, they were not really building their own infrastructures. They were taking what was already there, putting a whole bunch of data onto it, leasing from other data centers, and then piping out through what those data centers had. So I could very easily see where in many cases, because these are huge contracts for some of these data centers, they want that, and they'll say, yes, we can provide that, knowing that they will not be able to provide it at the start, but as they get subscribers, they'll get the money to be able to invest to upgrade later on. One of the biggest contracts that data centers have, and it's actually really interesting to go see, is utility companies fight over giving the best rates to data centers because they use so much power, water, everything else there. The utilities can have huge, huge battles over that because you've always got redundant servers. Most of what goes on in a data center is essentially waste. It's sitting there waiting for something to happen that they can kick in as far as that goes. So there's a lot of money involved with that. Now, data centers absolutely say, yes, we can handle this, knowing that by the time you've taken the effort and spent the money to actually get invested, Netflix will rather stay with you even though you suck for 6 months, knowing you're ramping up, than basically breaking that contract, having to pay whatever penalties are, and moving to someone else who already has that higher level of bandwidth.
I'm really glad, by the way, that you're bringing up these issues with relation to the throttling and who's throttling and how. One of the comments I was making earlier, kind of in passing, was that it's really difficult to actually throttle anything in specific because it might be encrypted or you might really not know where the endpoints are. Netflix just utilizes random servers on Amazon EC2. It uses Amazon Elastic Load Balancers, and it uses SSL encrypted traffic. And so sometimes it can be very difficult, even if you try to figure out how the traffic's being routed, how are they going to throttle it anyway? But, the example that I brought up with relation to things like FaceTime. I think the more insidious examples, though, actually come from some of the stuff that Jeff was saying earlier with relation to what I might call reverse throttling, where you have a bundling that occurs between the ISP and the service that they provide that competes with something like Netflix. And so if you have, for example, I think Comcast was one of them. I'm trying to remember which company it is. I think it was Comcast has their own like streaming DVR type service.
Right.
And so it's like if...
Xfinity, which is Comcast.
You can end up in scenarios where it's like, well, now it starts turning more into like the closed network scenario, and it's certainly clear what traffic is what to them, and they can actually just bill you differently. So it's like, we're not even going to bill you for full internet plan if you're going to utilize this Xfinity thing. We're going to do is like a throw-in package with our cable provider when we give you this DVR box. And it changes the business model dynamics in a very interesting and I think very complicatedly bad way when you're then looking at the competition between things like that and Netflix, which is why I totally appreciate the idea of saying like maybe one place to utilize regulation is to break up these bundled services.
Whoever provides the cable can provide the service as well, or at least has to be able to say, we'll charge you $10 a meg, but anyone else who wants to pipe data, we'll charge them $10 a meg as well.
Oh, okay, awesome, because that really leads into what I was going to talk about. That's just the perfect question-answer lead-in for this. So
you're welcome.
Very, very cool. So this is going to be kind of long. I'm going to make it really as quick as I can, so I have little notes to myself so I don't ramble. I want to mention a few things all tied together for you to respond to that's related to legal issues, because this panel is described as, you know, has the SEC given up, what can Congress do, and so forth. And I'm a person who would rather that Congress get out of the way and have things at the state level. And here's the reasons why, and I'm hoping you can respond to it. First, I do very, very, very much agree with trying to decouple the local last mile bandwidth from the content providers. Because if you have a monopoly that your local government says, you and only you can be the cable provider, nobody has any choice unless they want to move out of this area, then, and the cable provider is competing with Netflix, then you're kind of doomed. I mean, you want that difference. If you had some situation where whoever provided the network bandwidth just did bandwidth and they weren't allowed to do anything else, then suddenly all the incentives change into the way we want things. People would be charged for bandwidth. You wouldn't have collusion because that part wouldn't be allowed. However, there are already federal laws that preempt that, and I forget to what extent, but we already have a single point of failure at the federal level that's doing the opposite of net neutrality. So I'm kind of worried about us pinning our hopes on a group that's been proven to fail, where we can't, as individuals, have any effect because only moneyed interests will get the ear of the FCC when it really comes down to it, eventually will. But if things were at the state level, we have a much better chance. Awesome. 90% through. One example of that is I'm actually signed up for Chronix, and there was a bunch
What was that again?
I'm signed up for Chronix, the freeze you if you die thing. There was a bunch of political stuff that went on in Arizona that you probably heard about a few years ago, and it was really just all nonsense. But in the state legislature, there was suddenly a push to regulate cryonics, which is a life and death issue for cryonicists, obviously. There was one state legislator who took our side and actually argued things, and we did not get regulated. Well, one thing all the politicians found out very, very quickly at the next election in Arizona is that cryonicists contribute to campaigns. Every single person who voted against, voted to regulate cryonics, was voted out of office because individuals do have power at the local level. So I would rather us be able to maintain power at the state level and not try to pin our hopes on the FCC, which has already been proven to be, to not listen to our individuals' interests.
I think a serious problem that you have with at least how things are currently set up, trying to regulate things at the state level, is that these companies aren't operating at the state level. I mean, if you have AT&T, I keep talking about AT&T as an ISP because I'll honestly use ISP AT&T through my phone almost more than I currently use my
Constitution. I was just saying if states were allowed to do the whole let's separate bandwidth from services in any area, suddenly you'd have a lot more things such as the Tennessee, Chattanooga, example, you'd have a lot more examples for people to see if suddenly states were allowed to do that again.
So I guess I'm curious, like when you say the separate, like for example, like I was anticipating that was like we're going to take Cox and we're going to split it up into Cox Cable and Cox Internet.
Yes.
Okay. But Cox Cable is still a company that is operating at a level that is kind of extra state level.
But they're already state regulate. Well, they already have state regulations on different things. I mean, even if you think, you know, murder is a state law. There's not a federal law against murder. A lot of these things are state level for just normal day-to-day
you
things.
You just mean the separation at the state. Okay,
yeah, just the separation.
Right. It's not all the bandwidth regulation and the FCC.
And you could potentially, if you separated at the state level, you would get that same type of thing. By the way, people can throw things at me if I'm talking too much. That's fine.
The thing is that we do not have a state in the United States that does not rely in some way on federal money. So what will happen is the state will come and say, look, we're going to be doing this. Feds will say, okay, but you're not getting any federal money.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone in the state legislature winds up getting voted out because all their voters suddenly lost money, and whoever was running against them has now said, this guy just cost you every federal dime that you were getting. So even if the states have absolutely noble purpose and really want to do the right thing, the way that we're structured politically, they would lose horribly because the feds would go like, we don't want to give that up. And the feds have the right to limit how much money goes to state for any particular thing. And that's a huge battle between the Senate and the House as to, the Senate basically is not really supposed to be getting involved in individual people's issues. They're supposed to be links between states between states. That's gotten extremely murky, so they do handle individual issues. But that was something that should really be handled at the Senate level. And you've basically got two people for each state there. And they would simply say, if we can't maintain that control, we're just not going to fund your highways, your schools, anything along those lines. And come next election, the amount of money that, like you're saying, cryonicists put into it wouldn't even register on the on the scale as to how much money they'd lose across the board from everyone else, basically, just not just running but fleeing from them to someone else who will give them their federal money back. So it's a bad situation, and it is misused, but there's no way to really fix it, because to fix it would require people to act in a non-self-interest manner.
Yeah. What I was suggesting will not protect against federal bribery, but you are right.
It's not even bribery. The Fed does have a vested interest in maintaining communication across state borders, simply because no company could effectively work if they literally had to handle 50 different, completely separate bunch of regulations within each state, and then find a way to make these things match up when it goes between states, where you may have completely contradictory laws about the same thing. So the feds absolutely have to be involved, where they can tell a state, look, that's a really stupid law. For example, if some state wants to just outright ban guns, they'd be like, you guys can't do that because we have a federal law that says you can't do that. So we can't remove the feds, because they do really have a vested interest in making things work effectively.
So just an interesting rebuttal to that, but not my actual question, is that gets into a whole issue of interstate commerce and the clause in the Constitution. So it's not something that can legally be handled by the states. But my actual question is, I have a physics background, so I know how kind of ridiculous it is to try and promise a flat velocity for your internet, especially when you have the evil empire of Comcast and Time Warner dropping 10 levels of signal in a 10-meter period, which happened in my apartment complex. But what I want to know, are these companies proactively improving infrastructure, or is it all just, we can't keep up with the traffic, let's add something now?
I've had better cell service over the course of the last 10 years continually. I've had faster internet over my cell over the course of the last 10 years continuously. I've had better internet at home, especially in our little college town next to the university that just classically has horrible internet because every single person, there's a college student who's all torrenting. That has improved drastically. That's actually the town where my office is, so I get to see the experience. You know, I actually use Cox business cable for my office. I would definitely say yes. Of course, there's a bunch of anecdotes. I think that people feel like it's in a way not, because I think that our usage of bandwidth has gone up faster than ability for infrastructure to keep up. And I think that's because we've come up with some really cool things to do with it. This comment about like physics and stuff, like I mentioned earlier, an analogy to power. Power is actually comes up a lot because people like me will say, well, what about like per byte per like billing is similar to like per kilowatt billing or kilowatt hour billing. Power is actually is almost like it, people say, well, it's different because, you know, it's like there's actually a fuel cost dealing with power. Power actually is very similar to bandwidth in the sense that if you bring up a power plant, you operating it below its like peak efficiency is incredibly costly. You'd rather try to take offline an entire power plant during course of the day than try to like run it on lower efficiency. You'd rather waste power than. And then you have and battery storage is kind of ridiculous. There's a reason I wanted to get into, which is you brought up physics and bandwidth and
why was it? I just hate that.
I really hate that. I'm sorry. Brain fail.
Can't train got either. Derailed.
Yeah, you got the mic?
Yeah, we got time. Okay, we got 5 minutes left. We got time for one more question.
All right. Well, looking at the state of things as they are right now, but also looking towards the future, we got a lot of disruptive technologies. I mean, the internet by itself is a disruptive technology over the last 20 years. We're looking at the running out of the IPv4 space, and that space is where we've gotten really good at the control and distribution of the traffic. What's going to happen when we swap over to some of the IPv6, also with some of the technologies like Cloudflare, where and some of the ECS and stuff like that in Amazon, where we're obfuscating, not necessarily the content itself. So not only is the content itself going to be obfuscated from the middleman, but also what the client or the customer itself is going to be doing on these networks.
I think it's going to become harder over time in order to even have kind of differentiation occurring, because we're going to have more traffic going through smaller like things. That's why, like in Netflix already, I mean, everything's going through Amazon Elastic Load Balancers, which are actually using the Amazon Elastic Load Balancer domain names and everything, which are these like random string sequences. Like I've actually like watched the traffic related to Netflix and going through all these things. And so it's like you get to the point where you can't really throttle individual companies anyway. You don't really know where the bandwidth is going. You don't know what it is because it's all encrypted. And so I think that it's going to end up in a situation where a lot of the concerns people have related to network neutrality are actually non-concerns. They're in a way they're temporary concerns that it would almost be humorous if we succeed in regulating them before they end up not being concerns.
That'll be a first.
Well, what about in regards to also like the rise of the consumer NAT versus the implementation of IPv6?
A good switch can handle either. So the actual crossover from IPv6 to IPv4 really won't be much of an issue, because that'll be handled at your major DNS folk for you effectively. I suspect that internally at least, we'll still be on IPv4 for quite a while and run tandem with IPv6, simply because it doesn't matter if you use the same IPs, because one company, you've got each class CD and ABC. Which are the three classes that are things?
A, B, C, D.
Yeah. No.
You meant that.
Each one, in each basic class range, there's a group that's been segmented out specifically for private use. And the odds of individual companies maxing out those ranges internally is simply not very good. So the whole netting thing is not much of a problem, because they'll have outside systems that are, if they're under IPv4 space, which they already have actually, they'll just bring up IPv6 and let the switches handle everything internally. So what I suspect is that as you start getting new things coming online, they'll simply start off with IPv6 and never have an IPv4 unless it becomes necessary. And for the rest of it, the consumer won't even see what's going on, because it'll be completely transparent to them by that point.
All right, one more question from this man right here.
So we all know that Comcast, and to a somewhat lesser extent Time Warner, has a bit of a monopoly,
Monopoly in what sense?
As in, there's really not any other option. Like, if we don't like what Comcast is doing, we can't just switch to another company, because there is no other company that has even remotely comparable services. So what can we as consumers do, since we can't just switch to a better company?
One of the reasons you can't switch to the company is simply because the companies technically illegally do collude. They're not supposed to be talking to one another and making pricing deals and whatnot. There is no monopoly. Let's put it this way. Legally, there is no monopoly. No ISP has a monopoly over any particular section. What happens is when AT&T says a Comcast is in a particular area, AT&T will simply choose not to go into that area. That's a good question, because you've actually got an entirely separate option with doing things like power companies running IP over power lines, which completely bypasses your current ISPs entirely. But
is there a company doing that on wide range?
Not commercially.
What about the Chattanooga model?
Yeah, you can't do that because it interferes with radio bandwidth.
It kills ham radio. It kills all sorts of things. It kills VDSL, and so you're basically knocking out all of your AT&T stuff and your Verizon fiber if you want power line. And you're not just knocking it out to yourself if you wanted it. You're knocking it out to all
everyone.
I think she should have been on the panel. I don't know.
Yeah. That's happened before. We've seen.
Yeah.
That's a really good question, because the people you need to talk to are the people who don't really want to do that. The current model benefits them. And that's where regulation may come in useful, where it's forcing them to do something they don't want to do. But again, they're the ones with the money who are talking to the FCC and to your local politicians. It's not the best solution, but that'll probably be your only really effective one, is to start talking to your local people and encouraging them to look at these things. Your politician probably definitely knows less about technology than anyone in this room does. It's not their job to know tech. The people they rely on to know tech are telling them whatever they're hearing the most about, which is the lobbyists. So you need to find a way to get your voice into that area. Individually, not much of a chance in that. So join groups like the EFF. Find out who is doing what in your local areas as far as thing, as you know, as far as grassroots movements go. Get involved with them and help them to become a larger voice. Find out which local politicians are promoting certain net things. Get behind them. Once that gets into a higher level and people start getting interested in that, you'll see more money coming over that way. But until that happens, we're kind of stuck with what we have right now.
Sadly, we're now out of time. So if you have any other questions, you could probably come up after. Like, I'll be here for a little while, though I'm not certain if I can necessarily answer your question.
And thank you all for coming.